So imagine you're stepping out of a helicopter, right? You're dropping right into the dusty, chaotic, just absolute high alert war zone of Kabul, Afghanistan.
Yeah, nervous system on absolute overdrive.
Exactly. Every single sound is a potential threat. But then, just a few weeks later, the only sound you're hearing is like the wind catching the sails of your boat as you're gliding through these pristine, completely silent blue waters in the British Virgin
It's
Islands.
crazy.
It is. How does the human brain even begin to process that kind of psychological whiplash? I mean, how do you reconcile those two massive extremes into one single life?
Well, it requires a completely different operating system for how you process your own experiences, honestly.
Yeah.
And that operating system is exactly what we are dissecting in today's deep dive.
Which brings us to the famous opening lines that so many of you are already deeply familiar with. Hello, I am Ed Rafe, and this is my blog, Hotel Anywhere.
The classic opener.
Right. Though we should definitely note, for those who love the deep lore, the original text actually uses this rather creative spelling. It's hotel and then the at symbol, NYWARE.
Which is such a product of its time, but also very fitting.
Yeah, totally. Now, as listeners of this deep dive, you likely already know the broad strokes of Rafe's 15-year journey. I mean, you know about the world cruises, the war zones, the pandemic isolation stuff.
Right, the itinerary.
Exactly, the itinerary. But today, our mission isn't just to recap where he went. We are going to really unpack the underlying mechanics of his decade-plus calendar of hindsight. We want to understand the actual physics of how he turned geography into this philosophical tool.
Right, because what's fascinating here is that if you look at the entire archive spanning from 2011 all the way to the 2025 convergence, it operates on a very specific and I'd say highly unusual central doctrine.
Yeah.
Every January, Rafe doesn't sit down and write these forward-facing New Year's resolutions like most of us do.
It's just so refreshing.
It really is. Instead, he treats the previous year as something that comes back to him carrying a map. He literally calls these backward bearings. The core argument here is that a year only becomes truly legible after it has actually stopped happening.
I want to linger on that concept of the backward bearing for a second because it completely flips how most of us operate day to day.
Oh, total.
We are constantly trying to read the map while we are still, sprinting through the woods. We try to assign meaning to a breakup or a massive career change or even a global crisis the literal second it happens.
Right, we want instant clarity.
Yes. But Rafe is saying that meaning actually requires stillness. Like, you have to wait until the momentum stops, reach the clearing, look over your shoulder at the wake you just left, and say, oh, so that is the path I was actually carving.
And that idea of looking at the wake, it's not just a cute metaphor for him. It is the physical mechanism he used to launch this entire massive project.
Right.
If you want to understand how a year only makes sense in reverse, you have to look at the literal instrument he used to measure time in the beginning. We're talking about the early ocean years, starting specifically with the long way around in 2011.
Okay, yes, the legendary 23-port world cruise from Los Angeles to London.
That's the one.
Now, most people, I think, view a world cruise on a luxury liner as the ultimate exercise in passive consumption.
Oh, absolutely. The buffet, the deck chairs.
Exactly. You sit on a deck chair, you drink a martini, and you just let the world put on a show for you. But Rafe's text explicitly frames this not as a vacation, but as a deliberate rejection of modern speed. The rule he establishes here is fundamental. He says you do not see the world by flying over it.
Well, think about the mechanics of modern air travel. You get into a metal tube in New York, you watch two movies, maybe eat a tiny bag of pretzels, and you step out in Tokyo.
Right.
You have completely bypassed the physical reality of the Earth. So by choosing a ship, Rafe is forcing what he calls letting distance take its time.
Letting distance take its time. I love that.
It's powerful. When you cross the Pacific on the water, you are forced to experience the sheer, terrifying scale of the planet. And that deliberate slowing down completely alters your sensory input. It creates a space where observation isn't rushed, it's sustained.
Which perfectly explains the massive explosion of output the following year. Because in 2012, his right
Right.
year, he published more than 130 dispatches while visiting over 50 destinations.
That is a staggering amount of writing.
It is. But the crucial takeaway for us isn't just the sheer volume of the posts, it's the actual function of the writing. He wasn't journaling to remember, like, what pasta he ate in Rome.
Right.
The writing was the mechanism that actually made the internal journey visible to him.
That is such a critical distinction. because translating physical movement into language forces you to process it. Like, if you just take a photo of a landscape on your phone, you just capture the light. But if you sit down and write about that landscape, you are forced to capture how it altered your internal state.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit more, because I know there is a cynical voice in the back of some people's heads right now listening to this.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Even knowing Reif's broader philosophy, looking at 2013 and 2014, where he's spending massive amounts of time on ships, navigating the Panama Canal, bouncing from the Caribbean to the North Sea. I mean, let's be real, it can still sound like a very wealthy traveler just collecting exotic backdrops.
Sure, can come across that way.
Right, like if I'm on a luxury ocean liner for 90 days, am I really doing deep philosophical work? Or am I just completely insulated from the grit of real life?
Well, that is the exact challenge the archive anticipates. And it answers it by introducing this concept of the map as a mirror.
The map is a mirror.
Exactly. When Reif looks at the Panama Canal, he doesn't just see concrete locks and water pumps. He sees the audacity of humanity deciding to physically redraw the Earth's geography just to suit its desires.
Wow.
And then he turns that outward observation inward. He starts asking, where are the internal continents I am trying to forcefully connect or divide?
Yeah. Ah, I see. So the environment is basically just a prompt.
Well, more than a prompt, it's a reflection. When the text says the map becomes a mirror, it literally means that geography begins to return the traveler's gaze.
Okay, give me an example of that.
So think about how this actually works. If your internal state is incredibly chaotic and anxious, and you walk into a completely silent, centuries-old cathedral in Europe, that silence doesn't automatically bring you peace.
Oh, it makes it worse.
Right. It amplifies your anxiety. It reflects your inability to sit still. Conversely, the harsh, violent weather of the North Sea might feel incredibly comforting if you are navigating internal turbulence yourself, because the outside world suddenly matches your inside world.
That is fascinating. So every city, every ocean passage is basically asking the traveler the same fundamental question, which is, will you merely understand this life, or will you actually move? So the ocean liner isn't a luxury hotel for him. It's a closed system laboratory. It's an instrument measuring departure, horizon, and return. The ship is the only constant, and the world is just the water churning in its wake.
Which naturally begs the question, right? Mm-hmm. Once you establish that travel is a way to measure your internal life, what happens when you push that measurement to its absolute geographical limits?
Right, because you can only measure the ocean for so long before you have to test the extremes of the land.
Exactly. And that takes us right into the intense structural experiment of 2016, the A to Z year.
Okay, for those who need a quick refresher on this, he literally forced his entire itinerary to follow the alphabet.
From Annapolis to Zambia.
Yes. Now, on the surface, that sounds like a gimmick, like a YouTube challenge or something. But when you look at the mechanics of it, applying an arbitrary constraint to your life forces you onto paths you would never naturally choose. You stop traveling based on comfort and start traveling based on a rigid external rule.
And that rigid rule led him straight to the letter Q, which happened to be Qatar.
Of course.
Which perfectly sets the stage for the massive shift in 2017. He takes an assignment with Raytheon in Doha. Now, Raytheon is a major defense contractor, and Doha is a city of just wild extremes.
Oh, the visual surface of the Qatar chapter is so cinematic, it almost feels distracting. I mean, you have the Pearl, which is this massive, artificial, manufactured luxury island. You have sports cars, these deep desert roads, ancient falconry practices sitting right next to cutting-edge military technology.
It's a lot to process.
And the red arrows. The British aerobatic team literally painting the sky with transient speed.
But the archive explicitly warns us not to be seduced by those shiny objects. The sensory overload of Doha is really just the backdrop for a much deeper philosophy that Reif calls the power of yet.
The power of yet.
Right. He was living in an environment obsessed with immediate displays of wealth and finality. But his internal revelation was the exact opposite. It was this stubborn idea that becoming is always better than being.
Here is where it gets really interesting and highly applicable for you listening to this right now. Because Reif talks about the danger of confusing the current frame with the entire film.
That's a great analogy.
If you pause any movie during a moment of conflict, the protagonist looks like a total failure.
They're at their lowest point.
Right. So think about the current frame of your own life. Maybe you are in a holding pattern. Maybe you are grinding away at a job that feels meaningless, or you are navigating just a brutal personal transition. If you judge the success of your entire existence by this one frozen, isolated image, you completely miss the trajectory of the motion picture.
and valuing that trajectory over the frozen image is what Rafe calls the long game. And you really see him fully embrace this during his 2018 interlude aboard the Queen Mary 2.
Okay, set the scene for that.
So he's traveling from Hong Kong to Southampton on what is widely considered the last great traditional ocean liner. And this voyage really marks the death of the traveler who merely collects geographic coordinates.
Right. He actually calls it the long way home.
He does. And home here isn't a physical address. It's an internal baseline. He realizes that having a direction is infinitely more valuable than arriving at a final verdict.
That's beautiful.
He is basically shifting his metric of success from the sheer external volume of his travels to the internal signal those travels generate.
Which is a brilliant philosophical evolution. But the universe has a very funny way of testing your shiny new philosophies by basically throwing you into a wood chipper.
It sure does.
Because right as he embraces this long game, the scale of his life gets violently hijacked, first by extreme personal danger and then by just total global paralysis.
Yeah, the whiplash we talked about at the very beginning of this deep dive happens in 2019, which he aptly named the Warrior Year.
Right. You have these two realities running on parallel tracks that seemingly cannot coexist. He is doing defense work in Kabul.
Which means helicopters, fortified barracks, daily threat assessments.
Being surrounded by people whose entire lives revolve around the mechanics of war and survival. And then he juxtaposes that with sailing in Tortola in the British Virgin Islands.
If we connect this to the bigger picture and look closely at how he processes this, the contrast itself is the teacher.
How so?
Well, when you oscillate between a high-stakes survival environment and an environment of pure, unadulterated leisure, the superficial layers of your ego are just burned away. The archive reveals that this extreme contrast forces absolute clarity on what actually deserves protection.
Right, it's not your status or your blog metrics.
Exactly. It is family, your physical health, deep friendship, your personal integrity, and ultimately your time.
And just as he crystallizes the absolute premium value of time and connection, the year 2020 arrives.
The world shuts down.
The world shuts down. Rafe frames this era as BC, before COVID. He experiences the pandemic primarily through the cultural lens of the UK and Ireland.
And the text highlights this uniquely British concept of the stiff upper lip colliding with just unprecedented medical uncertainty. I mean, we all remember the stalled careers, the sudden implementation of masks, the eerie social distancing. But Rafe focuses on the tension of it all. He notes how pretending things were normal felt like denying gravity, but underneath it all was this agonizing, stubborn human desire to simply gather together again.
But his response to the pandemic dragging into 2021 is what really requires some interrogation, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Because instead of moving to a comfortable city with, you know, robust delivery services and hospitals, he moves to Fair Isle. He dubs it the Outpost Year.
And Fair Isle is one of the most remote inhabited islands in the United Kingdom. It's this tiny, weather-beaten rock situated exactly where Scotland meets Scandinavia.
Right.
The logistics of just existing there are incredibly complex.
And this is where I really have to push back a bit, or at least ask for the mechanics to be explained.
Okay, lay it on me.
The archive repeatedly frames this move to Fair Isle as an exercise in freedom. But let's be real here. The text itself admits that convenience became optional. You are at the total mercy of North Sea storms. Ferries get canceled, supplies run out.
Oh yeah, it's brutal.
So when the entire global population is already suffering from the intense claustrophobia of lockdowns, how on earth does marooning yourself on an isolated rock equate to freedom?
Well, it's a brilliant question of choice architecture.
Okay.
Think about it. When you are in a massive city during a lockdown, your restriction is imposed by human bureaucracy. It feels suffocating because it is deeply unnatural.
Sure.
But on Fair Isle, the restriction is imposed by nature. Mm. You cannot debate a hurricane. You cannot negotiate with a blizzard.
Ah, so the lack of control is actually the point.
Well, wait, let me frame it how Rafe actually experienced it. The text argues that this restriction did not reduce his story. It fundamentally changed the scale of
it. It changed the scale.
Right. When weather and logistics dictate your absolute boundaries, they stop being annoyances and they become your daily strategy. You learn the mechanics of maneuvering within a storm rather than exhausting yourself trying to fight it. And this leads to his most profound realization of the pandemic, that a smaller world actually made room for a larger life.
A smaller world made room for a larger life. Wow. Because when you strip away the massive jet edge momentum, when you can no longer rely on a change of scenery to stimulate your brain, You are forced to find depth instead of distance. You have to look at the 3 square miles around you and finally notice the details.
And that realization permanently rewrites his operating system. Because eventually the lockdowns do end, the map reopens, and we enter the final era of our deep dive from 2022 to 2025.
Right.
The fascinating thing is Reef completely refuses to go back to his old habits. He doesn't resume the frantic, globe-trotting pace of 2011.
Yeah, he calls 2022 the return to depth. He essentially takes that micro-focus he learned on Fair Isle and applies it to a macro world. The old travel itinerary is basically thrown out, replaced by what he calls better instruments for attention.
And we really need to look at what those instruments actually are, because they are incredibly diverse.
Yeah, let's go through them.
He explores physical belonging back on Fair Isle. He explores ancestral inheritance in Dublin. He touches what he calls deep time among the ancient Neolithic stones of Orkney.
Which is incredible.
But then he juxtaposes all of that ancient history with hypermodern systems. He spends time at Harvard and he attends DevLearn.
DevLearn is crucial here. For those who don't know, it's one of the largest conferences for instructional design and learning technology. It's literally the study of how human beings acquire and retain capability.
Right.
So he is placing inherited institutional authority like Harvard right next to pure technological experimentation. But honestly, the most surprising instrument he adopts during this period is poker.
Oh, absolutely. Poker is arguably the most vital metaphor of his post-pandemic mindset. Rafe basically uses the game as a laboratory for studying calibrated uncertainty.
Okay, let's break down the mechanics of that, because some people just think of poker as, you know, degenerate gambling. Mm. How does a card game teach you to navigate life?
Because poker, at its highest levels, is not about luck at all. It is applied decision science.
Applied decision science.
Yeah. Think about chess. In chess, all the information is visible on the board. But in poker, just like in real life, you are forced to make high-stakes decisions with incomplete information.
Right.
You do not know what cards are coming, and you do not know what your opponent holds.
So you don't control the environment, you only control your response.
Precisely. And if you make a mathematically perfect decision, you can still lose the hand due to variance.
Which is maddening.
It is. But that is the calibrated uncertainty. Poker teaches you to separate the quality of your decision from the immediate outcome of the hand.
Oh, that's huge.
In a post-pandemic world where everything feels dangerously unpredictable, this provides a framework for taking risks without losing your nerve when the universe just deals you a bad beat.
And armed with this new framework, 2023 sees him finally back in full motion. He's moving from the Western Kingdom of South Africa to Las Vegas to Portugal, Spain, and Gibraltar. But the archive is very, very careful to point out that this is not revenge travel.
Right. Revenge travel was that weird phenomenon where people frantically booked flights to just, like, make up for the years they lost to COVID.
Exactly. It was driven by panic and a sense of deficit. Rafe wasn't traveling to recover lost time. He was traveling to understand what time had permanently altered.
He wasn't looking for coherence in the destinations anymore.
No, he found the coherence in the companionship, specifically traveling alongside Sarah and his dog, Skylark. He titled this year, An Attitude of Gratitude. The shared experience actually became the destination.
Which naturally acts as a funnel right into the 2024 archive, which is beautifully titled The Curated Year, or the EdFlix cut. This is where the shift from volume to signal is fully realized.
So what does this all mean? I love the film director analogy here. Think about a master director in the editing room. They might have shot hundreds of hours of visually stunning, incredibly expensive footage, right?
Tons of material.
But to tell a masterpiece of a story, they have to be ruthless. They have to leave some of their absolute favorite scenes on the cutting room floor simply because those scenes don't serve the core narrative.
And that's exactly what he did. Back in 2012, during the height of the ocean years, Reef needed over 130 blog posts to prove to himself that the journey was real.
The volume was the proof of life.
Exactly. But in 2024, the EdFlix cut only contains 14 dispatches.
He slashed the volume by almost 90%.
Because he no longer needed the noise. He stopped measuring his momentum by how much he produced, and he began measuring it by the purity of the signal.
The purity of the signal.
Yeah. The things that survived his final edit were companionship, cultural depth, and restraint. He learned that a highly curated, high-signal narrative carries you infinitely further than just an exhausting, unchecked itinerary.
It is the ultimate maturation of the traveler. You go from wanting to see absolutely everything to only wanting to see what actually matters. And this brings us right to the edge of the present moment, to the 2025 convergence. The map, after 15 years of expansion, finally folds back in on itself.
Yeah, in 2025, the separate silos of his life stop behaving like isolated chapters, and they fuse into a single, unified operating system.
It all comes together.
It does. The maritime history reopens in Gibraltar. The physical act of writing is grounded in Sussex. He brings iron, sail, and speed back to the waterline in Portsmouth. But most importantly, he brings all of his fragmented digital identities under one roof.
Because the Hotel Anywhere universe had become incredibly vast over the years. I mean, you had Rock and Rome managing the Gibraltar and remote work dispatches. You had the Decision Science blog dedicated entirely to poker, expected value, and probability. You had the Fair Isle dispatches capturing the wild weather and isolation. You had Deja Blue chronicling his life on the water. And you even had Skylark offering a perspective from a curious canine mind.
It was a lot of distinct threads. Mm-hmm. But what the act of publishing did in 2025 was take all of these highly specific, distinct journeys and forge them into one cohesive body of work.
A body of work that the archive states is built on three final pillars: reality first, truth exposed, and capability earned.
He didn't just summarize 15 years. He synthesized them into pure signal.
Yeah.
It truly is a masterclass in psychological architecture.
And for you listening to this right now, trying to parse through the noise of your own life, the ultimate lesson of the Hotel Anywhere archive is honestly incredibly liberating.
It is.
Rafe's meticulous cataloging isn't a mandate for nostalgia. He isn't asking us to live in the past or to constantly look over our shoulders with regret. The archive proves that you simply cannot intelligently plot your next move forward until you have recovered your bearing from the past. You have to read the map of the terrain you just survived before you take the next step.
Which leaves us with a critical question to consider, I think.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, we spend vast amounts of our mental energy, especially at the start of a new calendar year, agonizing over our forward-facing plans. We stress over the future, constantly trying to predict what we should do next.
Always looking ahead.
Always. But if, as Rafe's central doctrine proves, a year only truly becomes legible once it has stopped happening, what if the answers to the hardest dilemmas you are facing right now aren't hiding out there in the foggy future at all?
Oh, wow.
What if the exact insight you need is already behind you, just waiting to be decoded in the wake of the year you just survived?